Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
It is Monday, and on Mondays we talk NASCAR. I'm Chris Graham. We'll be joined by Rod Mullins here on the podcast, and we're going to break down what happened in Arizona on Sunday. And fourth winner in four races here in the 2022 season, Rod. So the next-gen cars seem to be equalizing the field there. A lot of parity in NASCAR these days.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parity coming up with these cars. And Kevin Harvick, I think, is used to it a little bit more now. I mean, Kevin Harvick ran top five, I think, most of the day, or at least toward the finish of the race yesterday. Even contended, was leading there, pretty close there to leading there at the end of the race. Thought he was going to break a 45 or 46, race losing streak that he's not been able to win at, but thought he was going to be able to pull something out. But one of the comments that he had made was, he said, I think this car is starting to grow on me a little bit more. I'm starting to get used to it a little bit more. It's something that, you know, I wasn't sure of, but he said Phoenix has been a test. But, you know, they're going to get an ultimate test, I think, this next coming weekend when they go to Atlanta, the new banking at Atlanta. But this past weekend was definitely one of those things of where it definitely proves that I think the car is balancing the field out a whole lot more than what we thought.
So the race came down yesterday to three guys. I mentioned four races, four different winners. Mm-hmm. Three guys who hadn't won yet this year. Briscoe, Chastain, Reddick were dueling down the stretch. Take us into those last few laps of strategy and how things turned out.
A lot of jockeying in there between those three, and they were wanting the win badly. Tyler Reddick wanted this win so bad. I mean, he could taste it. You know, and then at the same time, Ross Chastain, he's been out to prove, you know, he's no fluke. He in his 40th start, but he's out to prove, hey, I'm gonna give the competition, the field, a little bit of competition to deal with. He took up almost all the real estate there on that big portion of the, you know, the track there as they go and they level out. It kind of comes off the little slight banking and levels out into a big kind of set up there, almost running into the infield. And he took up almost all the real estate he could, was able to go and get a couple of places out of that, but not close enough. You know, but Tyler Reddick, between him and Tyler Reddick, and then also Chase Briscoe, you know, it was amazing that Chase Briscoe pulled this win off because, you know, with 80 laps to go, Chase Briscoe was falling to pieces in his car. He was crying because he said, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, pull this off. I'm this close. You know, I'm hoping we can win because, you know, he ended up becoming the 200th different winner in NASCAR's Premier Series. He was last year's Rookie of the Year, won by 0.771 seconds over Ross Chastain. So, you know, you got to really give credit where credit's due to this guy because 7 years ago, he came to North Carolina, was hoping for things to just really improve and really take off for him. And he was about ready to pack it up and just head back home. And then he got the call to go up on one of the Xfinity Series teams, and then he started racing there. But I'm telling you, he really raced well yesterday. I think it was a lot of people were making the comment, you know, he raced as well as maybe his car owner, Tony Stewart, might have raced at one time or another, maybe without the physicality out of it and kind of slamming some people here and there. But still, he came up with a great win. It was a much-needed win for Stewart Haas Racing.
Talk about how one of the ways he did it down the stretch, four laps left, the final restart of the race, he dipped low under that dog leg, and that was mm-hmm. something that was talked about a lot going into the race. Would anybody try to take advantage of that 110-degree dog leg there? Mm-hmm. Kyle Busch, I think it was he the first one who attempted early in the race and said, hey, I'll take it and I'll see what happens here. Mm-hmm. And then so later in the race, Briscoe bravely goes down, sees if he can get some track position, does so, and then holds off for the win.
Well, I mean, you know, when you go down and you're going toward a flat portion, everybody else is up on the bank, you're kind of cutting your distance. You know, it's kind of a mathematical thing. I'd have to ask my wife for the formula on this. I don't know. But I know when you're coming out of that and you're coming into the group, you know, the group is kind of racing together and you go down that dog leg and then you're down there on the apron of the track, so to speak. And then you just kind of shoot back up and you kind of have an advantage. It's sort of like one of these things of where when you're driving on the road, it's easier for you to be in the other lane if it's going into a curve and you're kind of being there real tight. And, you know, the other car has to work harder on the outside to kind of get around you. You're holding your ground, and that's the way things are, and that's the way he drove. And, you know, I mentioned Ross Chastain. He did the same thing after Kyle Busch tried it. Chastain did it a couple of times, especially with those 80 laps or so left to go. So everybody was trying that dogleg to get a little bit of an advantage, and sure enough, he used it too for his advantage in the win on Sunday.
Hey, Briscoe had said that Phoenix was one of his least favorite tracks.
Yeah.
He goes out there and gets the win. So maybe talk about, I mean, here now, you know, other guys had run well on this track, but here's a guy who admittedly didn't like it, and he goes out there and is able to get the win.
Well, you know, and I think that's a testament to the next generation car. I think it, you know, gives them something that they maybe didn't like in, you know, racing that particular track and so forth. It gives them something that they can fall back on and let the car do a little bit of it. And this car, like everyone else has got in the circuit, they're all even cars. They're all supposed to be even. They're supposed to be even across the middle. No, you know, big significant changes from one car to another, from one team to another. And I think that made a difference probably with him driving his experience, knowing the way that Phoenix was. He kind of steered himself out of trouble. But I think that next generation car probably helped more than anything else. You couldn't say that, though, about Kyle Larson and then also Chase Elliott, some of the front runners that's been in the races so far this season. Kyle Larson, you know, he won here, you know, has won on the season so far. He suffered a DNF. He pitted with 74 laps to go, had a broken valve in the engine, broken valve spring, put it that way, in the Hendrick car, and he finished 34th. Chase Elliott spun there toward, I think, about 9 laps left to go, and that's what set up the overtime part, trying to get everything cleaned up on the track and then get him back out there. But, you know, we're not seeing as many real bad wrecks, so to speak, this year. We've not seen in just the, I know we've got Talladega coming up. That'll be coming up in April. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, Daytona, we didn't have that bad of, you know, series of wrecks or anything. The car seemed to do pretty well. I think the only thing that people have really got the question about, the tires. Are the tire combinations really working or not? And I think that there's people that's looking at that and saying, you know, we're getting through the first series of races. Of course, we've got to come back to Phoenix and places like this. We'll find out or we'll learn more as we go on through the season. But, you know, tire wear, tires has been one thing I think that has caused some of these guys. And, you know, the thing about coming out of the turns, a lot of these guys brushed the wall yesterday, and they brushed the wall, they hit the wall, they went into a spin. Christopher Bell saved his car. Don't know how in the world he did it, but he managed to save his car. But you had others that just didn't have as much luck. And so I think it's a car. The car thing is kind of out of the way now. Let's just throw the car thing out and just say, hey, look, we've got a good car. I think it's finally working into the way we need for it to work. Now let's just address the tire issues and some of the other smaller issues that seem to be taking place in this car.
Ryan Blaney had a really strong race. He ended up finishing fourth, but man, led 138 of the first 185 laps, won the second stage.
Yeah.
Talk about his day.
Oh, he had a fantastic day, but he just didn't have enough there at the end of it to be able to hold on to it, to be able, I think he even got a lap down or something like that, managed to get back on the lead lap. But anyway, got caught back in the pack somewhere, managed to work his way back up through the pack. But I'm telling you, you know, they've got a great driver over there at Penske Motorsports with him driving. You know, people were worried about Brad Keselowski and so forth. Yeah, I know Austin Cindric took his place, but, you know, Ryan Blaney right now, to me, I think he's the up-and-coming star, has been for a long time. You know, you've got Logano over there. Austin Cindric is still in his rookie season, but I think Blaney's kind of gotten out of the shadow, so to speak, of Brad Keselowski now, and he's starting to kind of stand up for himself, and he's a great driver, great personality, a nice guy to talk to, you know, and even got a great race team crew, pit crew. He's got a great pit crew there, too. We know, actually, my son and I know a guy that worked on the tires and everything for Penske and for his car last year, and we managed to sit in the pits and have a talk with him, and just, you know, great insight on him, just what kind of driver he is and how he treats his team and how the team treats him. It's a good working companionship kind of partnership, if you want to call it that.
Kevin Harvick did not win yesterday, finishing the top 10, though. And in so doing, he tied a longstanding record with a couple of big names. Talk about Harvick and what he was able to accomplish.
18 consecutive top 10 races finishes at Phoenix. and goes to the all-time NASCAR Cup Series record set by Richard Petty and the late Dale Earnhardt at North Wilkesboro Speedway. So, you know, he's in some great company. He may not be winning some races right now, but he's at the front or near the front. And, you know, this counted a lot. You're going to be in the history books. You're in there with two seven-time winners. And, you know, hey, he's not even won seven championships. So, hey, you're in good company if you're in with those two.
Exactly. Hey, not a big day for Tony Stewart. Chase Briscoe wins in the Cup Series, but also his team won on the drag strip. Did you follow this news?
Yeah, they won down at Gainesville, and of all people, Matt Hagan and him took a little bit of a cold water bath right there at the end, and he was just tickled. Matt Hagan, that was his 40th win, I believe, in the NHRA, and that was Tony Stewart's big breakthrough win right now into the drag series in NHRA, and so they celebrated big time. A lot of people were questioning whether or not Leah Pruitt and then also Matt Hagan were going to make so much of an impact. Well, you know, Leah is Tony Stewart's fiance, so you kind of expected her to kind of go with this team. But, you know, they kind of cleaned house on Don Schumacher Racing. And so you took Matt Hagan out. You took Ron Capps out, who went independent. And so you've got all this, you know, having to start all over again and then having to start from scratch for Tony Stewart. And ups, and, you know, here they are into the second weekend, I think, of the NHRA. They go to Gainesville. They got rained out on Friday, but they managed to squeeze everything in on Saturday and Sunday. And Hagan, who is a Christiansburg, Virginia native, you know, picks up his 40th win, and he was like, man, he couldn't have done it for a better team. So he's moved on, and he's in good standing right now with Tony Stewart. And they just really did a great job yesterday in the NHRA race down in Gainesville.
So after 3 weeks out in the West and Southwest, NASCAR heading back east in Atlanta this weekend. You mentioned, Rod, the challenge with the new banked turns there at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. So what can we look forward to this Sunday at 3:00?
Oh, it's anybody's guess about this track, because it's still kind of in the how can I say it? It's an unknown. It's a big unknown out there about how this track is going to be when you get, you know, 38, 40 cars out there on that track. And, you know, they say that they have taken some of the banking out or put some of the more of banking in. So it's going to be a really, really entertaining race, I think, coming up on Sunday to see this one, the Folds of Honor race that they'll have down there. Big event. They always have a big ado down there with the folks that are involved with Folds of Honor, and that's with the American flag, the veterans, and so forth. And, you know, they'll have a big deal about that. But whoever comes out of this one, you know, I'm just going to tell you, somebody better be looking in the rearview mirror and getting ready to expect Tyler Reddick or Ross Chastain to pull off a win somewhere. They came this close this weekend, and I think Tyler Reddick's going to pull off a win here soon. I don't know exactly where the track will be. He's raced well when he was in the Xfinity Series, won a championship in the Xfinity Series, just hasn't been able to get across that hump right now, made it almost to the playoffs last year. They came up short, but he's a heck of a driver, and I think a lot of people are selling him short right now, and Richard Childress has got his eggs in a basket, at least in that portion of it, with Tyler Reddick, I think, going in that direction. So I'm looking for Reddick to make a big splash, hopefully this weekend at Atlanta. But then you've got Chastain, you've got some others, you've got your homeboy from right there, you've got Chase Elliott, just, you know, from down in Dawsonville, Georgia. There'll be a lot of people pulling for him there when he gets back to Atlanta. That's his home track. So it could be interesting. We'll have to see how these next generation cars will last this coming weekend when they get down there to Atlanta.
So I'm going to finish up, Rod, with a basketball question. I want to get sense of the reaction down your way to the Tennessee Volunteers, the SEC champion Tennessee Volunteers, getting a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. I'm sure it's pretty hot and heavy down your way.
Yeah, there's a lot of people talking about it. I know Dick Vitale was up in arms over it. He was very upset over not getting a higher seed out of it. I think for Tennessee fans, for a bunch of Big Orange fans, they better be happy with what they got. They could have got a lot lower. But, you know, still, they've been playing some really great basketball here as of late, especially the win against Kentucky in the tournament, and then just really pouring it on against Texas A&M. I think everybody down here is starting on the bandwagon now, and everybody's jumping on for Virginia Tech after, you know, winning the ACC, and everybody's really bragging. Oh, they've won a championship. Yeah, but it's not the big one that counts. It's not the NCAA championship. But, you know, we'll give you that one, the first ACC championship for your basketball team. And honestly, I have to say, watching that game the other night, I was kind of happy for Tech out of it. I was happy that they had been able to pull that off. You know, they've really had a team that's got a bunch of no-names on it. This is a cupboard that has been left bare. And, you know, he always seems to be able to pull the talent together and down the stretch. And, you know, he got him into the tournament. He got him in. A lot of people would have given up on him back here, about a month ago. A lot of people would have given up on him. So I think the big thing is you got a bunch of bandwagon jumpers going on for Tech. You got a lot of people that's saying, hey, Tennessee, we're just happy to be in the tournament, considering, you know, the ups and downs that they have. But, you know, they've not lost that many games. I mean, people need to realize that. But this is their last shot. I think for Rick Barnes and some of the guys on this team, the John Fulkerson that plays for him, Fulky as they call him, he's from Kingsport, about an hour and a half from me. You know, they're on cloud nine over this one. And I think that they have the ability to be able to go all the way down to the Final Four. Tennessee's never been to a Final Four. So as long as I can remember, I don't think they've been to a Final Four except maybe in women's basketball. Oh, so the men, you know, this is going to be a first for them. So they're going to have to, you know, do something with that. And then the rest of us are going to have to just settle back and just say, what could have been, coulda, shoulda, woulda, as Virginia goes to the NIT, and they're going to play at John Paul Jones on Wednesday night against Mississippi State in the SEC. So it'll be interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Rod, as always, thank you for your time and your insight. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.